Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday, September the 26th, 2025, 9:26:25, 18 minutes past the hour, and we're kicking off the big show tonight in a big way. In the world we live in today, we need a little bit of comedy, and one of the best comedians I have seen as of late recently appeared on Joy's Comedy Corner on The View a week ago today, September 19th. We are so glad to have him with us tonight. One funny guy, Andy Huggins. Andy, how are you?
I'm fine, Scott. How are you?
Good. Good to talk with you. Andy, 1 week ago today, you're on The View. How did this come about?
Well, real quickly, was that D. Ted Williams that was gained fame maybe 10 years ago?
Yes.
Of his circumstance, but had a beautiful voice.
Yeah,
that Ted Williams?
That was him.
Okay, very good. The View, Joy Behar wanted to bring back Joy's Comedy Corner, which they used to do years ago. They dropped it for whatever reason. She wanted to bring it back. She had seen me on the internet and wanted me to be her first guest in their first show back. And, you know, they went the usual route. They got a hold of my managers and they asked me if I wanted to do it. I said sure.
So what was it like being on The View? What is that atmosphere like?
They're very it's a very relaxed atmosphere. The people are very nice. The backstage people, you know, directors and makeup and this, that, and the sound man and everything. They're very nice. It's very relaxing. They make it real easy for a person to go out there relaxed. And so, yeah, you know, and then once you get out there in front of a microphone, then it's, you know, it's stand-up comedy. So it was nice. Nice.
Joy Behar, being a comedian herself, how did you find her to be?
Friendly. My only interaction with her was on the show, and then a couple of minutes afterwards, backstage. But yeah, she's nice. She's not a comic on all the time. She wasn't trying to compete with jokes. But yeah, she's nice. Everybody's nice.
Now, The View is a network show, number one show in daytime, I believe, right now. To be out in front of that type of audience, were you nervous that day? How'd you feel?
I felt good. Like I said, they make it easy to be relaxed. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time. When I first started out, I used to get terrified about going on. Over the years, I've gone from terrified to nervous to anxious to relaxed. So I was relaxed. Like I say, you know, once you get out there, you're in front of a microphone and, you know, you do what you do. So it was fine. Audiences, I happily, without any design, it's just the way it's worked out, I do well in front of all kinds of audiences.
Well,
so to see an audience that was primarily female, primarily probably of a age range from 30 to 70. You know, not a problem. Not intimidated at all.
Now, what do you think it was? We all remember, people who've watched The View, Joy used to do the comedy club years ago. It's been a long time since it was on the show. First time back, she picked you. What do you think it was about you that caught her eye?
Well, no doubt my age makes what I do unusual. And then I have a very uncomplicated view of things. I assume it was also because the jokes were funny. You know, and I'm a 75-year-old man doing very good jokes, doing very funny jokes. Boom.
Now, Andy, how did you decide on the material that you were going to use on The View?
Well, of course, you take those jokes that have certain words in it, of course, and certain topics, of course. And then, you know, I like most of the jokes. In fact, I like all the jokes I do. So then it was just picking and choosing. There were a couple of jokes that I really love that I wanted to do. So I included them. But it was 4 minutes doing stand-up, then 4 minutes talking to Joy. I average about four jokes per minute. So that's 16 jokes. I went and found 32 jokes that I liked.
Actually,
they suggested the producer, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
He is familiar with my act. And he picked out a couple of jokes he wanted me to do, which was fine with me. Like I say, I like all my jokes.
Now, what has the reaction been in the past 7 days since the show aired?
Very little reaction from that show, quite honestly. Now, I was curious as to their viewership. So I looked up their viewership on Wikipedia, and they average about 2.6 million people a show. And 2.6 million spread out throughout the whole country. It's not that many. I mean, it's good for a daytime show, but it's not that many. So I haven't been swamped with, I don't have to wear a disguise when I step out.
It's a whole different world today with everything being fragmented.
Where I get recognized, and it happens all the time, is from the internet, from Instagram, and from my Don't Tell special, and my comedy special, Early Bird special. The internet has just been very big for me. Allergies. And so, if I get recognized, and it happens from time to time, it's almost always because of that.
Now,
like I say, the View was great. And it, I'm sure, will bear benefits here in the future, the immediate future. But, like I say, the internet's bigger.
Now, Andy, you say you're 75. What edge does being 75 give you?
75, what's reflected within that 75 years is 45 years of writing jokes. 45 years of doing stand-up. So what gives me the edge, if I have an edge, I don't know. I just sit down and do the best I can. I write the best jokes possible, the best jokes I'm capable of writing, then I go out there and do them the best I can. And so, you know, I don't know what edge. I mean, I would say I have an edge because I think funny and I think comedically, but that's true of all good comics. So I don't know that I have an edge on anybody. I don't worry about anything else other than am I doing my best and how that fits in overall scheme of things.
Now, I watched you on The View, and a lot of your jokes did have to do with being older. Is it easier to write those jokes, the older jokes?
Yeah, well, it's easier because it's a significant factor in my life. It's hard to ignore. In fact, it's impossible to ignore. So in that sense, it's easy. In that sense, being old presents you with a lot of different circumstances that you can turn into jokes. So yeah, it'd be hard to avoid. In fact, and it'd be silly to try and avoid doing jokes about being old. So, I won't say they write themselves, but the premises for the jokes appear on a regular basis.
Now, Andy, what makes a joke funny? I'm being a writer that you are, I'm sure you've written things that you got up on stage that and performed that weren't funny. What makes a joke really funny?
Surprise. The punchline's got to be a surprise. That's it. I mean, if it doesn't surprise, if people can see the punchline coming, then it's not going to get a laugh. So you got to surprise them. And it's kind of, it has to make what I do, and there's a lot of different approaches to this. But what I do, it's got to make sense. The joke has got to make sense. The premise has got to be believable. The setup's got to be believable. The joke, the punchline's got to be a surprise. So you got to combine believability with surprise, and that'll get a laugh. And if it has some sort of, if it has a visual component to it, if you can imagine the joke. I don't think I did this one, but a joke I have is I do worry about tripping and falling when I walk, so I wear a helmet. Also worry about looking ridiculous, so I carry a skateboard. That is so visual that that adds to, I mean, the silliness of me thinking I'm going to fool somebody by carrying a skateboard is one part of the joke. But just visualizing me in a helmet and carrying a skateboard, that just makes it funnier.
Has there ever been something that you wrote that you thought, this is going to be great, and you got up, and it just did not fly at all?
All the time. I write my jokes down on an index card, and then I have index card boxes, and I have, boxes of jokes that I'm currently using, jokes that I used to do, and I like, but I'm not doing them anymore for whatever reason. Then I have a box full of jokes that just didn't work. And I thought they were going to work. That's why I did them. And so I was right. One time I had an opportunity. We were doing a show together, Jeff Foxworthy and myself, and we were talking between my performance and his performance, and we both, I mean, between the two of us at the time, we probably had 80 years worth of comedy writing between the two of us. We're both good joke writers. We're both particularly good joke writers for ourselves, and we both have had the experience where we've written a joke that we thought was so good, not only was it going to get a laugh, we were going to have to close with that joke because it was going to get that big a laugh. That's how strong we thought that joke was. Well, you know already how it ends. I mean, not only didn't it get a big laugh, it got no laugh at all. Mm. So I'm surprised all the time. I wish, that part of the challenge is that you just can't be sure.
Who's been the favorite comedian that you have worked with?
Oh, I enjoyed working with Brian Regan. I worked with both him and his brother Dennis, who's also a excellent comic. We did a show in Houston at the Improv, and Dennis was the feature act, the middle act. Brian, of course, headline. And, you know, the show was unbelievably great. And we hung out in the green room talking. That was good. He might be as good a comic as I've ever worked with.
Now, has there been some
kick out of working with John Witherspoon, who played? I worked with him about four or five times when he played Houston, and we knew each other from the Comedy Store, so we'd sit in the green room and reminisce.
Has there ever been a comic who you've worked with that it wasn't a great experience?
Not really. You know, I'm not sure I'd name somebody if there was somebody that stood out. I may be able to think of one or two that were basically jerks, but I don't let things get unpleasant. I'm so into what I'm doing that what somebody else is doing is not much of a concern to me. As long as they don't screw up my time on stage, that they can be however they want to be off stage. I can't think of a single in 45 years. I bet I could if I thought about it long enough. I also have a great habit or characteristic of being able to bury bad memories.
Mm.
I just don't. You know, I'm sure I listen to podcasts all the time with comics, and they'll, who's the worst heckler you ever had? And they'll give whatever answer they give. And I'll think about it. I've never had a real bad. I've been heckled, but nothing real bad. And the fact of the matter is, there probably has been. I just have chosen not to remember it. So that's probably an unpleasant comic or two. But I just don't, you know.
Yeah. So many comedians are doing political humor now. Do you do political humor?
No, I don't write good political jokes. They're heavy-handed. It takes a particular light touch, I think. I mean, you got to balance between getting laughs and expressing. Well, it depends. Do you want to do political jokes that get laughs and have a point of view, or do you just want to make fun of Donald Trump's haircut? I mean, which isn't really political jokes, but it involves a political figure, so some people think of that as political jokes. But if you want to express a point of view and get laughs, that takes a pretty deft touch, which I don't have. All my jokes, like I say, are heavy-handed. There's nothing I have to say that I feel the world needs to hear.
Well, it's interesting because I recently saw some comedians here in Ohio went to a comedy club, and the two big names that night who had been on national shows and done national tours, they were not really political. One sort of was, but the other was not at all. And I thought that was kind of interesting and a little refreshing that it had more to do with their life and their age and their family than anything else.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, maybe it's the same with them that it is, than like it is with me, or maybe they decided, things being the way they are these days, I'm just going to put the political material aside for a while. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they, amazingly enough, there are people who just don't care about the politics of the world today, and maybe that's why they don't have any. They could care less.
You know, Andy, most people would rather die than go up on stage and try to be funny. Why did you want to do this? What drove you to do this?
I had to do it. I've been watching comedy and stand-up since, early teens. It's just something that I felt compelled to do. And like I mentioned earlier, getting on stage initially was literally terrifying. Terrifying. It was the greatest act of bravery I've ever displayed in my life, given how scared I was. But I would get up there and do it. I had to do it because I thought funny. I knew that was a talent I had, and I had a good ear for comedy also. So it just seemed like something I had to do. Certainly nothing else was competing with it as far as talent goes. So, if I didn't do that, I don't know what I would have done. Had to do it.
Are audiences different in different parts of the country?
Not in my experience. Not in my experience. And I guess, because of television and because of the internet, I don't know if people travel outside their own state more than they used to. I don't know. But doesn't seem that way to me. Certainly hasn't been in my experience. I haven't had to make any adjustments to the people I play in San Diego, to the people I play in Chicago, to the people I played in Jamestown, New York, or where was I? Oh, or New York City. I don't, or Houston. They all, in my experience, not at all. Not at all.
Now, Andy, you're 75. You're performing stand-up comedy. Is there anything else you did in your life? Any other jobs you did?
Not to brag about. Not to. I never had a career before comedy. I had jobs I did, but, you know, I didn't have a career.
What is it at 75 that you have not done with this career that you would still like to do?
I would like to do a late-night talk show.
So you want to guest?
I grew up watching. I'm sorry?
You'd like to guest on a late-night talk show?
I'd like to do a set on a late-night talk show. I'd like to do on a late-night talk show what I did on The View. Now, and that's entirely a romanticized notion in my head as to what talk shows are. I grew up watching Johnny Carson and then Merv Griffin, and that's just coming through the curtain and hitting your mark and doing your act, and then you finish up and you look over at the table where the host is and your wife. You know, that's just what I grew up watching. So, just in a romantic sense of life that used to be, because I don't think that. In fact, I'm sure late night talk shows don't have the influence on one's overall career that they used to.
Well, certainly this week they did.
I'm sorry?
I say certainly this week they did, but probably on a regular basis, not.
On a regular basis, no.
Yeah.
I would have hated to have been a stand-up on that particular show this week. You would have been buried. I think maybe... Don't Tell Comedy, which I've done a couple of Don't Tell Comedy specials, they might have a bigger influence on my overall career going forward than a late night talk show would. Maybe not.
No,
maybe not.
No. Go ahead.
No, I ran out of steam there. I don't know what I was going to say.
No. Of the late night talk shows that are around right now, which one would you like to do?
Oh, let's continue with the romanticized notion and say The Tonight Show.
Yeah, been around a long time.
Yeah, maybe I could get them just that one time. Say I was booked on The Tonight Show. Maybe I could just that one time when I'm introduced to play The Tonight Show theme from when Carson was... the host. I doubt they would accommodate me. But yeah, The Tonight Show would, if I had to choose.
Well, and Jay Leno and David Letterman are still out there doing things, so who knows? Maybe there's something there.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. You never know. Well, Andy, could you, people like to laugh. Could you give us some jokes before we wrap this up here tonight?
Scott, I don't want to, This is the thing with one-liners, is that it always sounds awkward in any other under any other circumstance other than standing on stage with a mic in your hand. Okay, let me just one that I just wrote, so I don't even know if this is. I gotta show tomorrow night. I'm going to be trying out a couple of, hopefully more than a couple, new jokes. But all your listeners, visualize a 75-year-old man talking. I've always been an old man. I was an old man in high school. For the senior prom, I showed up at 4:30.
That's good. I like that. Andy, I hope...
Well, let's hope it works tomorrow.
Let's hope it works.
Tomorrow and thereafter.
They're laughing at home. They're laughing at home. Are quick jokes the best?
I'm sorry?
Are short jokes the best?
They're what I do. There's no best or better when it comes to type of jokes. It's just what I've always done. It suits the way I matches the way I made my friends laugh off stage when I was growing up. So there are a lot of advantages to one-liners, but it's not. One big disadvantage is it takes so long to fill up the time when you're just doing one-liners. Because I can write. It takes four jokes at work to give me a minute worth of in my act. That's a new minute. Well, it just takes. If you're headlining and you're doing 40 minutes. That's 160 jokes. Is that right? 4 times 40 is 160 jokes, which means I have to try out probably 250 jokes to find 160 that work, which means I have to write, 350 jokes to come up with 250 that I want to try. I mean, it just takes a while. That's the disadvantage. Otherwise, it's easy to adjust time. If you got if the club owner tells you, could you do 3 more minutes tonight? Not a problem. I got 12 jokes I can add. It's real easy to adjust.
Andy, I was just thinking. How much of the joke? A lot of it is obviously in the writing and in the performance and in the visual, but how much is in the setup? Because you talked about not. You have a whole pile of index cards and jokes that didn't work. Now, if you brought a pile of index cards up on the stage and you said, this is a pile of jokes that didn't work, and you pulled it out and read one, do you think it'd get a laugh, even though it didn't get a laugh when you used it before just because
if I set it up that way, now I think the jokes, if it's a good joke, it stands a better chance of getting a laugh if it's in the flow of an act. But if you want to go on stage, and this wouldn't be a bad approach on open mic night when you're trying out new jokes, just go up there with a handful of index cards and just try them out. And if you set it up that way, then the audience will make the adjustment they need to make. We're hearing new jokes. This isn't. It's not going to flow like it. Like it will if in the future, but yeah, the circumstances, the audience can adjust. Hopefully, the audience would adjust.
Andy, as we approach the end here of this interview, I think it's interesting because you're 75. We've talked a lot about it. Age jokes are a part of this. They were a part of your appearance on The View. Just physically being 75, what's it like just to get up on stage and stand there for a period of time, remember the jokes, everything's still good and easy there?
I have to go over the act. In fact, that's what I've been doing most of the day, is I got a show tomorrow night, 30 minutes long, 120 jokes, just going over it, and I'm adding in a lot of new jokes. I got to figure out, where do I want to put the new jokes? And I need to figure out where can I put them so that I remember to do them. So the memory part has gotten more difficult over the years, though I've managed to stay on top of that. I have a bad back, so doing 45 minutes when I headline, that's a little iffy, but there's always a stool on stage, and I don't hesitate to sit down. If I need to, so yeah, there's the ravages of age are present. You got to go, instead of going over your act a half hour before you go on stage, I got to go over it maybe a couple of days before I go on stage.
Is there ever a day you foresee hanging it up?
Not at the moment.
And Andy, I guess the final question I have for you is, so many people who get to be retirement age, 65, they don't want to get up in the morning. They feel life is over at 65. you know, the alarm goes off for people who are 25 and they don't want to get out of bed. They don't want to go to work that day. Here you are at 75 performing 30 minutes on a Saturday night, remembering a lot of material in front of a live audience, getting laughs. What do you say to those people who, you know, they're not so happy with their life, or they get to a certain age and just don't want to do anything? I'm too old to do that.
Well, find something you love. Find something you love and do it. Real simple. Find something you love.
Is money important?
If it's a hobby or another kind of a job or a person, if you love it, it's not a problem. You know, there's the old expression, nobody ever on their deathbed wishes they had worked more. Well, you know what? I will. On my deathbed, I will wish I had worked more.
Is money important to you? That's why a lot of people make the decisions they do.
It's important that it makes life easier. I have no desire to be well off or rich, whatever that is. I like the fact that I don't have to dodge the landlord every month. I like the fact that I'm ahead in my bills. It's important in that it makes life easier. And it keeps you from worrying. I don't know if you've ever been broke. I've been broke, and it just brings along with it a lot of worries. Particularly if you're absolutely carefree, maybe you can deal with being broke better than most. But I'm a worrier, not having money just adds to the stress. Well, I have a couple of bucks these days. That's great.
If somebody came to you, Andy, and said, you can go on stage, you can do comedy, but we're not going to pay you to do it, would you still go up there?
Well, I'd have to figure a few things out, but... I can't imagine that situation, because I'd have to get a day job I'll put it this way. There are shows where I go up for free.
Mm-hmm. The
nature of the room, an open mic night, where I go up and try new material, I'm not getting paid.
I guess the better way to phrase it is would you give up comedy if nobody was paying?
No. I'd figure something out.
Yep. Well, Andy, I loved your appearance on The View. I can see why Joy Behar picked you to bring you back. I'm so glad you were able to come on. I hope it goes well tomorrow, and I hope you come back in the future, because it's great talking with you.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. Are y'all... in Cleveland Brown territory or Cincinnati Bengal territory?
We're closer to Cleveland Brown territory.
Okay. Well, good luck to y'all on Sunday.
Hey, the Andy Huggins, catch him on YouTube or anywhere you might be able to see him. Instagram, he's all over the place. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Andy Huggins, fresh off his appearance on The View, enjoys Comedy Corner 1 week ago today. 75 years old. It's never too late. Matt Morgan in studio with me tonight, and the phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. Give me a buzz. So what do you think, Andy Huggins?
Comedians are always good.
I liked him because he had the national television exposure 1 week ago today. I liked him because he was funny. I liked him... It was clean. It was all clean on the View last week.
I can imagine.
Well, I just think that's different. So much is not clean. You know, we went to the comedy club recently, and those things, a lot of them, you could not do on television or radio.
Well, I mean, I found it interesting that the closer we got to the headliner when we went to that event, the more mainstream, I guess, the comedy seemed to become.
Well, that's the way it goes, I guess.
I mean...
Phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. You know, I like that Halloween has come to the studio. Top of the hour, we're playing the Halloween poems now.
Oh, God, Halloween.
We got the pumpkins up, we've got the garland in the studio that's pumpkin and skulls and skeletons and... I don't know what that bats. The purple is bats, I guess. And we've got the cereals, Boo Berry, Count Chocula, Frankenberry. It's hot. The cobwebs are in the studio. The next week we do the television.
I'm gonna punch it.
Did you not grow up in a no? Did you not get a Halloween costume when you were a kid or something?
Oh no, Halloween's just not a good. That's just not entertaining. I don't know. I've never been big into Halloween.
Moving on. Phone lines are open 740-383-9944. Well, I'll tell you, David Letterman today was back in the news. He did his. I don't know if it's a pot. It's a YouTube thing. He has a YouTube channel.
Who?
David Letterman. And every so often he posts something on there. And he did like a 6 or 7 minute video today with his, I think, former producers, I think, must work with him. He's in an office. Anyway, he said that Jimmy Kimmel saved the Republic. And he said people have to stop being surprised by Donald Trump. He said everybody keeps saying they're surprised by what he does. Letterman said people have to stop being surprised by Trump. He's a dictator. That's what dictators do. Thought that was interesting from David Letterman.
I don't know that that's what dictators do.
Well, hard to believe you'd disagree with that.
I think dictators...
You disagree with everything.
I think dictators tend to want to not stir up drama. I mean, they're dictators. I mean when there's no...
No, they try to squelch what people are doing that are against what they're doing. Do you think people need to... They do. I'm surprised this happened. You hear that all the time. Well, apparently David Letterman's tired of it.
Surprised that what happened? Kimmel was removed?
Do you pay attention to these shows?
About 75% of it.
I don't think it's that much. I think it's under 50.
Okay, so...
This is not a hard story to follow. This is not difficult.
Well, I thought...
What do you think I was talking about?
Just in general.
Like, I'm talking about general things? I told that story to talk about general?
No. Just, like, because... I didn't realize you were referring to...
When I said people need to stop being surprised, yeah. What did you think after I said that story I was referring to?
Life? Obviously Donald Trump, but just in...
Right.
Because he said Trump, but, you know, in general. Just like Donald Trump does a lot of crazy things that people are like, wow, okay.
Well, probably
like
this
UN
story...
speech? I think the UN speech probably surprised a couple of people.
I don't know why.
I don't know. I still expected the man to not get up there. I mean, he made himself
what
look
are you
like
waiting
a fool.
But he doesn't think so.
I'm sure he doesn't. It's good for him.
I understand what Letterman's saying here about the surprise part. What are people surprised about? What have you not seen in the last 10 years? I mean, I don't get it.
Seen like what?
Well, what is surprising? None of it surprises me. We do it because it's news stories, but at this point, what could be surprising?
Well, I mean, I think that the Trump speech at the UN was pretty surprising.
He's not said things like that before? He's pretty consistent in the stuff he says.
At a global press, a UN meeting in front of the UN and global war.
So you thought he was going to like shape up and give a normal speech all of a sudden?
I figured he wasn't. I figured he was going to do something other than get up there and tell them their countries are going to hell.
Why?
Because that's not what you do. That's not how you do it. That's not how the politics works.
Okay.
Oh,
you think the politics works?
He got up there and complained about the escalator being broken, and he got up there and complained about the teleprompter not working. Which, by the way, the teleprompter not working. The White House was in charge of the teleprompter, per the White House, I'm pretty sure. And as far as the escalator stopped working, they said that it was because of somehow the cameraman tripped us a safety feature because he was going up backwards.
Okay.
So, he spent the entire meeting ranting about nothing. Things he did. Well, not he, the White House, I guess. His people did.
I don't know. I've not been surprised by anything Donald Trump's done in the last year. I mean, you see it.
I guess it doesn't necessarily surprise me. It's more just like, oh my God, here we go again.
Well, we must like
it. He just goes on, and it never ends.
Well, I don't know. I mean, okay. I guess you get to do what you want to do.
Well, yeah.
So, there you are.
Well, I mean, what are we going to do about it?
But it is, I think it's an interesting point that Letterman made, that why are people still surprised? 10 years of this, you know, we can cite many things that this man has done or said that maybe were shocking the first time around, that you might have been surprised about the first time around, but what could possibly surprise you at this point?
What do you mean?
Again, that was difficult.
I mean,
I think you're kind of off tonight, like a step off. I think the comedian fried your brain.
No, I mean, like, if I could tell you what would surprise me, I don't think it'd be surprising.
Right, but I mean, is there something in your brain that you could picture Donald Trump doing that would surprise you? You'd go, oh, that's interesting.
Saying he was wrong. He could say he was wrong on a couple of things.
Okay, there you go.
I'd be like, huh, okay, all right, well.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because the normal thing would be surprising to you.
Oh, I don't know. Politicians tend to not admit that they made mistakes.
Oh, I've known a lot of politicians who know that I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have gone down that road. I shouldn't have made the deal with that person. They're you know, they'll do that. I should have talked to that person. Should have been easier.
Well,
Kamala Harris just wrote a whole book of what she should have done.
Yeah, I don't know.
107 days.
The more I hear about the book, the less I'm on her side.
Because.
It does kind of come off as a little bit of sour grapes. I mean, she explains, I guess, at, like, the reasoning, but, like, she had, like, off-the-record conversations that she noted down, and she blamed Joe Biden for a lot of things, and, like, come on. I mean, you can't run for office, and then when you lose, blame it on everybody else. I'm sure you had some problems, too. I mean, I'm sure...
Well, maybe that's in there. I don't know. But that's not as interesting for people to talk about when somebody says, I did this. I should have done this. Well, I think she did as far as vice president goes. She said, I chose somebody that was not my first choice. And she does say, I should have went to Joe Biden and told him that he should not be running. But I didn't.
I mean, it's that. You're still just by proxy blaming Joe Biden for continuing to run the race. The only thing you're doing is saying, well, I should have told him he shouldn't have run.
Well, yeah. That's different, though. That's not... what Joe Biden was going to do what he was going to do. But she's just saying, I should not have been silent. I should have... That's a you thing.
Did she tell him to run for president, or did she just not tell him to...
She didn't tell him to stop, but she's saying, I should have. From what I saw, I should have told him... He should not have, and then maybe we wouldn't have got to 107 days. Maybe we would have, but maybe we wouldn't have.
I think he still would have run. I don't think...
Right, that's fine. It's his choice. But I'm saying she is regretful that she did not... She was not honest with him. Which, there you go. And a whole lot of other people apparently were not in the White House as well, so she says. But we'll find out more when we come back on the other side of this short but important break. Don't go anywhere. You're tuned into WGH Radio. Enjoy what's coming up, and we'll be back. Get your cheese dip.
And then attack me every time I open my mouth. I like that. And I think you're a fair reporter.
Streaming live on the internet at WWGH.